The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive, where we really try to unpack profound ideas, ideas that can genuinely reshape how we understand ourselves, maybe even the people around us.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we are immersing ourselves in a truly monumental work. Dr. Bessel van der Kolk's The Body Keeps the Score.
Yeah, this one is. It's huge. It's way more than just, you know, required reading in psychology circles.
Right.
It's really a complete paradigm shift.
Yeah.
It changes how we look at stress, at suffering, and importantly, at recovery.
Okay.
The core idea, the really revolutionary argument, is that trauma isn't just a bad memory you file away somewhere upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
It's a deep physical imprint. It affects the nervous system, the body's actual architecture.
Exactly. So if you've ever known someone, or maybe it's you yourself who's struggled for years, maybe with chronic anxiety or flashbacks, feeling constantly on edge, even after trying lots of conventional talk therapy, this book really gets to the why.
It does.
It suggests the body is, well, holding on to that traumatic score,
mm-hmm.
and therefore lasting recovery has to involve these bottom-up approaches, things that directly engage the physical self.
That's the key, engaging the body.
So our guide through all this complex material is Dr. Bessel van der Kolk.
Right. He's a Dutch-American psychiatrist, and he's been really on the front lines of trauma research and clinical practice for over four decades now?
Yeah, long time. Started way back with Vietnam veterans, I think.
That's right. His credentials, well, they're immense. He founded the Trauma Center in Brookline. He's a professor at Boston University.
And wasn't he also crucial in getting PTSD actually recognized, like in the DSM?
Absolutely instrumental.
Yeah.
Getting post-traumatic stress disorder established as a formal diagnosis, that was huge.
But what makes his perspective so, I guess, distinctive? It's not just academic, right?
Not at all.
Yeah.
He brings together three really crucial things. First, there's the rigorous scientific research. He was pioneering brain imaging work early on.
Okay.
Second, just deep, compassionate clinical experience. We're talking thousands of patients over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And third, he had this genuine willingness to explore innovative therapies, sometimes things outside the mainstream, especially body-centered approaches.
So he's connecting the dots, like from the MRI scan to what actually works in the therapy room.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This isn't just theory spun out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. It's really the culmination of a lifetime trying to figure out what helps people truly heal in the real world.
Okay, so the book itself, The Body Keeps the Score, what's its main purpose?
Well, his whole goal really is to dismantle that old strict separation we've had in Western psychology between the mind and the body.
Mm-hmm.
Van der Kolk argues very persuasively, I think, that if we ignore the physical side of trauma, we're missing the core wound.
Right. And he starts with the neuroscience, doesn't he? Explaining how it actually works in the brain.
Yeah, he lays that foundation first. He shows how a traumatic event isn't processed like a normal memory. It literally changes the brain's structure and function.
Oh, so.
Particularly the communication pathways, you know, between what he calls the upstairs rational brain, the prefrontal cortex, and the downstairs survival brain, the limbic system.
Okay, upstairs and downstairs. I like that.
It's a useful analogy.
Mm-hmm.
When trauma hits, that downstairs survival brain basically hijacks the system. It takes the wheel.
Ah.
And that explains what he calls the tyranny of the past. Why survivors re-experience danger through these overwhelming physical sensations right now in the present.
Like they're hijacked by it.
Exactly. Their body's alarm system gets stuck in the on position. That leads to chronic hypervigilance, all sorts of physical and emotional symptoms long after the actual threat is gone.
And the book doesn't just cover single events like accidents or combat, does it?
No, definitely not. It broadens out significantly to look at developmental trauma too.
Which is?
Chronic abuse or neglect during childhood.
Mm.
When the trauma happens early and repeatedly. And frankly, that's probably the most heartbreaking section of the book. But it also offers this new map for healing.
A map that goes beyond just talking.
Yes. Beyond just talk, therapy and medication is the only answers. It aims to restore things like self-regulation, a sense of agency, and that deep feeling of physical safety in your own skin.
Okay, let's dive into those specifics then. The brain reacting under fire. You mentioned the upstairs, downstairs thing. What parts are actually involved when that danger alarm gets pulled?
Right. So he focuses on three main parts where the cooperation really breaks down.
Okay.
First, you've got the amygdala. Think of it as the brain's smoke detector.
Got it. Smoke detector.
After trauma, this detector becomes hypersensitized. It's just constantly scanning for threats, pulling the alarm bell, even when things are actually safe. That's where chronic anxiety often comes from.
Always on alert. Okay, what else?
Then there's the hippocampus. Its job normally is to contextualize memories, put a timestamp on them. This scary thing happened back then, on Tuesday, it's in the past. But the stress hormones released during trauma often impair the hippocampus. So the traumatic memories lose their context. They lose that timestamp.
Which is why flashbacks feel so real, like they're happening now.
Precisely. They don't feel like memories. They feel like a current event because the past label is missing.
Wow. Okay, and the third part?
Maybe the most critical one for recovery. The medial prefrontal cortex, or MPFC.
Okay, MPFC, what does that do?
That's like our internal watchtower. It's responsible for self-awareness, observing ourselves, and regulating our emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the wise captain of the ship.
Right.
During trauma, and often flashbacks, the MPFC essentially goes offline. It gets shut down by the survival brain's alarm.
And if that goes offline?
Well, you lose that ability to manage your internal state. You can't calm yourself down effectively. That leads to those feelings of being overwhelmed, fragmented, maybe out of control.
Okay, so that's the mechanism for a single event. But you mentioned developmental chronic stuff in childhood. How does that change things? Is it just more the same?
It's more profound in a way. That's where the book discusses developmental trauma in depth. Van der Kolk argues it's the most destructive form.
Why?
Because it happens when the brain's core systems for emotional regulation are still being built. And they're built through secure attachment to a caregiver. That bond is the biological foundation.
Okay.
But what happens when the people you absolutely depend on for survival are also the source of terror or neglect?
That's a terrible conflict.
It's a fundamental paradox.
Yeah.
It short-circuits the whole attachment system. He calls the result disorganized attachment.
Disorganized attachment.
Yeah. And it often leads to chronic self-loathing, deep difficulties trusting anyone later in life, and a really fragmented sense of self. The damage is pervasive.
Which is why he argues for a separate diagnosis.
Exactly. Developmental trauma disorder, or DTD. He feels the symptoms are much more complex and wide-ranging than what standard PTSD captures.
This connects to how memories are stored too, right? You mentioned they're different.
Yes, absolutely. This leads right into the nature of traumatic memory itself. He makes a really crucial distinction.
Which is?
Normal memories are usually narrative. They're stories you can tell, with a beginning, middle, and end. Traumatic memories often aren't like that at all.
How are they then?
They're fragmented. They're sensory imprints, like isolated images, sounds, smells, tastes, a sudden feeling of muscle tension. Nonverbal fragments. This is what he means by speechless terror.
Speechless terror.
And the science backs this up spectacularly. There are brain imaging studies he discusses.
Yeah.
They show that when a trauma survivor is triggered into a flashback, an area called Broca's area, which is crucial for language production, for translating thoughts into speech, actually shuts down. It goes quiet.
The brain literally stops being able to talk about it.
Essentially, yes. Huh. It goes nonverbal under that extreme stress.
That makes so much sense then, why just telling someone to talk about it can be impossible or even harmful.
Exactly. It's often ineffective because the trauma isn't stored as a coherent story waiting to be told. It's a visceral, physical state. Mm-hmm. Words often can't reach it directly.
Okay, so if words often fail, what does work? What are the paths to recovery he talks about?
Well, he stresses that healing really requires combining approaches. Mm-hmm. You need both top-down processing, that's mm-hmm. the cognitive stuff, making sense of it, understanding, mm-hmm. and crucially bottom-up processing, mm-hmm. engaging the body, the senses, the physical experience directly.
And he highlights some specific methods for that bottom-up work.
He does. He champions several innovative therapies. One big one is EMDR.
Eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. I've heard of that.
Right. It uses bilateral stimulation, often guided eye movements, but sometimes tapping or sounds while focusing on the traumatic memory.
And what does that do?
It seems to help the brain integrate those fragmented, raw sensory pieces. It helps process them, move them from feeling like present terror into something that feels like it belongs in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Resolved history.
Interesting. What else? He talks about physical practices too, right?
Yes, quite a bit.
Yeah.
He dedicates significant space to yoga.
Yoga, like downward dog.
Well, yes, but not just as exercise.
Yeah.
He highlights its power in teaching interoception.
Interoception, what's that?
It's the ability to sense and interpret your internal bodily signals accurately. Like noticing your heartbeat, your breath, tension in your muscles.
Okay, and why is that so critical for trauma survivors?
Because Often, for them, their body has become the enemy. It's been the site of pain, terror, constant false alarms. So when they feel a physical sensation like a rapid heartbeat, their immediate reaction might be panic. The amygdala screams danger. Yoga, practiced mindfully, teaches them to observe that sensation without reacting automatically, to just notice, okay, my heart is beating fast, without assuming it means doom is imminent.
So they learn to tolerate, maybe even befriend, their physical sensations.
Exactly. It helps them learn that the sensations themselves aren't dangerous. This gradually helps calm that hyperactive amygdala and rebuilds a sense of trust and safety within their own body.
That makes a lot of sense. He also mentioned some tech stuff, neurofeedback.
Yeah, neurofeedback is another tool he discusses.
Yeah.
It uses real-time feedback from brainwave activity, usually visual or auditory cues on a screen.
Okay.
It allows individuals to actually see what their brain is doing and learn, consciously, to shift it from that hyper-alert, traumatized state towards a calmer, more focused state.
So you're actively training your own brainwaves.
Essentially, yes. It's like physical therapy for the brain's regulation circuits.
Yeah.
It's about actively encouraging neural rewiring for calm.
Wow. Okay, so if we zoom out from all these details, what are the really big core messages we should take away from this whole book? Maybe the top three.
Okay, top three. First, and this is foundational, trauma is physiological. Full stop. It's not just in your head. It's encoded in the nervous system, the muscles, the hormones.
That feels huge. Because it validates so much, doesn't it? Those chronic gut issues, the constant muscle tension, the exhaustion.
Exactly. They aren't character flaws or signs of weakness.
Yeah.
They're often the physical, measurable results of a nervous system stuck in survival mode. Healing has to address that bodily reality.
Okay, so trauma is physiological. What's number two?
Second, the book is a really important critique of relying only on cognitive or talk-based therapies as the complete solution.
Because
if the trauma is fundamentally nonverbal and held in the survival brain, you simply can't just talk that part of the brain out of being on high alert.
Right. It doesn't speak that language.
Precisely. So the heavy reliance in some systems on just talk therapy and medication, while helpful for some things, often misses the core physiological piece of the puzzle.
Makes sense. And the third key message?
The third is really a message of hope, and it's grounded in solid science. Neuroplasticity.
Ah, yes, the brain's ability to change.
Exactly. The brain isn't like concrete, permanently damaged, or set in its ways after trauma. It can and does change and rewire itself throughout life.
So recovery is actually possible on a biological level.
Yes. Through the right kinds of experiences, often these body-based, bottom-up therapies, new neural pathways can form. The brain can literally learn to feel safe again, leading to integration and wholeness.
That's incredibly hopeful. The book must have some powerful quotes that capture these ideas.
Oh, it's packed with memorable insights. Let me think. One key idea, paraphrase, is something like, trauma is not just an event that took place sometime in the past.
Mm-hmm.
It is also the imprint left by that experience on mind, brain, and body.
That really sums up the core argument, doesn't it? It's a present physiological state, not just a past event.
Exactly. And another one I think really captures the goal of the somatic work he advocates for is, again, paraphrased, you can't fully recover from trauma until you learn to befriend your body, to feel safe in your own skin.
Befriend your body. Wow. That reframes the whole goal. It's not about fighting symptoms, but finding safety inside yourself.
Mm-hmm. Transforming the body from a source of fear into a place you could actually inhabit safely, a reliable home.
And maybe one more, something about acceptance.
Yeah, there's a powerful point about moving forward. Paraphrased again. The challenge of recovery is about learning to live fully in the present.
Okay.
As long as you keep fighting with reality, you will be a prisoner of the past. It really emphasizes that integration, not trying to erase the past, is the path forward. Learning to live with it, but not in it.
These ideas feel incredibly practical. How can people apply this knowledge in their lives, whether they've experienced trauma or are supporting someone who has?
It's hugely applicable. For individuals, maybe the biggest thing is it empowers you to be a more informed seeker of help. If you recognize those signs of a constantly activated nervous system, the hypervigilance, the physical tension, you know you probably need more than just talk. You can specifically look for therapists trained in EMDR or sensorimotor psychotherapy or somatic experiencing, or find trauma-informed yoga.
So you know to look for things that address the body directly.
Right. And it also validates the healing power of any activity that helps you build a positive, safe connection with your body. Could be dance, martial arts, mindful walking. anything that fosters that interoception and sense of physical safety.
What about for parents or teachers?
Oh, the implications for understanding children are immense, especially the insights into developmental trauma. It really pushes for a trauma-informed perspective.
Meaning
understanding that a child who is misbehaving, acting out, withdrawing, being disruptive, is very often dysregulated. Their nervous system is overwhelmed. They're not necessarily being defiant on purpose.
So it's not a moral failing, it's a nervous system response.
Often, yes. And instead of punishment, which can make a dysregulated child feel even less safe, what they desperately need is co-regulation.
Co-regulation.
Yeah, a calm, caring adult helping them to calm their nervous system down through presence, routine, soothing tone. That's how kids learn self-regulation, especially if their early attachment experiences were disrupted.
That feels like a massive shift in perspective for schools and parenting.
It is. And on a bigger societal level, it calls for bringing this trauma-informed lens into systems like criminal justice, addiction treatment, healthcare.
How would that look?
It means viewing many problems like addiction, chronic homelessness, even some criminal behavior, not just as bad choices or moral failings, but potentially as desperate attempts to cope with the unbearable internal state caused by unresolved trauma.
Trying to self-medicate the internal chaos.
Exactly. It shifts the focus from just punishment or management towards understanding the underlying wounds and facilitating actual healing, relational, and physiological repair.
Thinking back on everything we've discussed, what's the one thing that stands out most to you?
For me, it's probably that concept of speechless terror and the science behind it. The shutdown of Broca's area.
Yeah, that was striking.
It just provides such elegant, clear validation for why survivors struggle to put words to their experience and why approaches that bypass the need for immediate verbal narrative can be so incredibly helpful. It answers the why talk isn't enough question so directly.
Yeah, I agree. For me, I think the most profound takeaway is that message of hope tied to neuroplasticity.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that the brain and body aren't doomed, that they have this incredible innate capacity to heal and rewire even after terrible experiences. It's not just about getting back to baseline, but potentially building even greater resilience and wholeness.
It really does offer an integrated path forward, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Bringing mind, brain, and body back together, transforming pain into potential.
Absolutely. This whole shift from thinking about trauma just psychologically to understanding it physiologically, it really challenges us, doesn't it? To think about how we create environments for ourselves, for others, in our communities that foster that felt sense of safety and regulation. If the body keeps the score, well, what can we do day by day to help ensure our internal score reflects safety, connection, and being present in our lives? That's something I really sit with.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.